I have to start actually this morning with a bit of an apology. And for those of you who are really beady-eyed, you'll have noticed that in the weekly email that went out, it said I was going to be doing a talk called Elijah, the Man Who Stood Up. But I've changed the title, and this is now the second time I've done that, Andy. I'm really sorry. I take Andy's notes and I just totally disregard them. No, I didn't. I may have changed the title, but I haven't changed the readings and the main points. And the reason I settled on this title was because I actually found this really, really hard, this talk. Chris said I've been working on it for a while. I have been working on it in my head for a while, but for a scarily long amount of time, I had nothing on paper. And I did a lot of wrestling with it, a lot of waiting on God, and eventually this started to come out. And I'll talk you through why I've settled on that title. Sometimes we read scripture and we think there's just so much. In Elijah's story, there were so many dramatic events, and I was like, I could have talked about this, or I could have talked about that, or this, or that. And none of it quite felt right until I reached this point. And so we are going to look at three elements. Does this work? Yes. Of Elijah's story. Elijah alone in the wilderness. Elijah, the lone voice. And Elijah, the only prophet. And we'll expand on each of those a little bit more as we go through. And before we do, I just want to set the readings from this week in a little bit of context, because we kind of landed in 1 Kings 17 with Elijah just sort of having popped up, speaking to King Ahab. We don't really know much about what came before. And so let's just unpack that a little bit so we understand this context. Ahab is the eighth king that Israel has had over a period of about 50 years. So that's quite a lot of change over a relatively short period. And that 50-year period has spanned the time since Israel and Judah split into two nations. And we've got this series of eight kings over Israel who have all been pretty bad news. And Ahab is the worst yet. We read, if you went back a little bit, in 1 Kings 16, verses 30 to 31, it says, and Ahab, you have to forgive my pronunciation in this bit, because I don't know how you're meant to say these names, but forgive me if I get them wrong. Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord, more than all who were before him. And as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he, Ahab, took for his wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. So Ahab has married Jezebel, and that has led to him breaking the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. And by doing so, he has then led the whole of the nation of Israel into that sin. So it's not a great place to start. And that's where we start our readings. But we actually know really little about Elijah himself. He just seems to pop up in 1 Kings 17 and obediently gives this message that God has given him for Ahab, that there is a drought coming. Bit random. But it's not random. Because actually, a period of drought is specifically speaking to the fact that these guys were worshipping Baal. They believed that it was Baal who was in control of the wet and the dry seasons. It was Baal who had authority over that and over the weather. So Elijah, by giving this message, is saying, Yahweh, my God, is the only God. He controls the weather, not Baal. And I am going to show you that, and God is going to use his power to demonstrate that to you beyond all proof. There's going to be a drought. And what goes unsaid here is that God is doing that because what he really wants is Israel to turn back to him. He wants to be back in relationship with Israel. He's not just trying to make life hard for them. He wants them to see him again. So Elijah does what God asks. He delivers this message. And then God tells Elijah to head out into the wilderness. We read in 1 Kings 17, and the word of the Lord came to him, Depart here and turn eastward and hide yourself by the brook Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. You shall drink from the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there. So he went and did according to the word of the Lord. He went and lived by the brook Cherith, that is east of the Jordan, and the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. So here we have Elijah alone in the wilderness. I don't know about you, but I kind of quite admire Elijah in this scenario for being obedient and going exactly where God told him to. We don't know exactly how long Elijah was in this place, this wilderness place, but we do read later that the drought lasted about 3 years. So I suspect he was in the wilderness for some years. And God has sent him to this place where he is going to be entirely alone. It is not a particularly hospitable region of Israel he's gone to. It's not the kind of place where you could forage for food, even when there isn't a drought. So he is trusting by doing this that God would provide for him. He has learning by necessity to be completely dependent on God. And God did provide for him in this amazing, if slightly bizarre, way. These ravens each day are coming to bring him meat in the morning and bread in the morning and meat and bread in the evening. I am not an ornithologist, so I thought I'd find out a little bit about ravens. I'm sorry to say I know very little apart from they're a member of the crow family, but they are actually the largest member of the crow family. And they can, I really struggle to believe this, but apparently it says on the RSPB website that they can have wingspans of up to 150 centimetres, which you will be intrigued to know is about my arm span. So I'm quite a small human, but I think you'd agree that I'd be quite a big bird. No pun intended. I've had weeks to work on that, guys. I'm glad you laughed. So these ravens, some of them possibly about my size or, you know, my wingspan, are making these twice daily deliveries to Elijah. But ravens tend to scavenge decaying meat from dead animals. So I don't think he was being brought the best quality steak. And that's why I admire Elijah. He knew he was going to be fed by the ravens, and he still went. I think it's incredible that God commands the ravens to feed him. And I love that they are consistent in bringing him two meals a day. But it's still a bit gross, isn't it? I don't think I would be thrilled with that arrangement if I was Elijah. Although actually I just said to Chris, if you were being brought meat, decaying meat twice a day by ravens, would that be enough to turn you vegetarian? And he said probably not. So maybe it is just me that's got an issue with this. And in fact, later on, we do read that Elijah is brought, he's again provided with food by the angel of the Lord. But that time he's brought cake, and I am so much more on board with being brought cake. But seriously, it is really easy not to depend on God, isn't it? It's really easy not to depend on God. As a small group, Chris has already said, we've been doing the prayer course, and just over a week ago we had our session, and we were talking about the difference between praying for what we need and what we want. And I think for many of us in the Western world, there's very little we actually need. If we've got somewhere to live and we've got some form of income, most of our fundamental needs are met. We are well able to care for ourselves. But that can make it harder to depend on God. So how should we depend on God? Well, I think we need to know him and we need to trust him. We need to be able to recognize his voice and be obedient like Elijah was. And we can do that through reading the Bible, through spending time in prayer and worship, but also involving God in our daily lives not just in those monumental moments or the desperate moments. We have a God who wants to bless us. He wants to give us what we want as well as what we need. He wants to do life with us. I think he wants to bring us cake rather than decaying meat. So even though Elijah was alone in the wilderness, he wasn't really alone. He may have been alone in body, but I don't think he was alone in spirit. Most of you know that I am a statistician. So as part of my wrestling for this talk, I was doing a bit of research and I thought, actually, loneliness, I wonder what loneliness statistics are out there about loneliness in the UK. And according to the Office for National Statistics, which is always the best place to start, for anything, no, statistics specifically, relating to the UK. They did some analysis of a survey. This is 2016-17, so it's a little bit old. But they found that in England, 5% of the adult population said they often or always felt lonely. 16% felt lonely some of the time, and 24% felt lonely occasionally. So that is 46% of the population feeling lonely at least occasionally. That is like this half of the room. But if you then look at the UK, there's something called the Campaign to End Loneliness, and apologies, this might be a bit fuzzy. Oh no, it's not too bad. They found that if you look at the UK, not just England, 13% of people in the UK feel lonely all the time. Not only that, 70% of us know someone who is feeling lonely right now. And the effects of loneliness are damaging to our physical health as well as our mental well-being. So I think it's really important to acknowledge loneliness, to talk about it. We all experience times in our lives when we feel alone. Perhaps through loss, perhaps through feeling misunderstood. There are times when we just don't feel God's presence with us. Sometimes we might feel lonely despite being surrounded by loads of people or being really busy. There have been times when I have been on the tube with my face in someone's armpit and I have felt really lonely. Partly because I've got my face in someone's armpit, probably, but it is possible to be surrounded by people and feel lonely. But God is with us in the wilderness, just like he was with Elijah, even if we don't sense his presence. And it may be that there are some people here this morning who are feeling lonely right now. Andy, I was really touched by what you shared last week. You came to church feeling a bit frustrated and a bit lonely, but God met you on the way, didn't he? And that was really powerful what you shared last week. During those times when we feel lonely, it's really important that we hold on to the promises in Scripture. That God is with us. And I want to just read through some passages now that hopefully will encourage you if you're feeling lonely. And if you're not feeling lonely, if you're feeling fine, maybe use these to encourage someone you know who might be lonely. Or jot them down and come back to them when you might be in this place. Psalm 139. Where could I go from your spirit? Where could I run and hide from your face? If I go up to heaven, you're there. If I go down to the realm of the dead, you're there too. If I fly with wings into the shining dawn, you're there. If I fly into the radiant sunset, you're there waiting. Psalm 23. Lord, even when your path takes me through the valley of deepest darkness, fear will never conquer me, for you already have. You remain close to me and lead me through it all the way. Your authority is my strength and my peace. The comfort of your love takes away my fear. I'll never be lonely, for you are near. Deuteronomy, Elijah himself would have known this. This is part of the Torah. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. And Romans 8. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow, not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. Those are just four that I picked out. There are many more. Elijah wasn't alone in the wilderness, and neither are we. So eventually, after a few years, Elijah hears God's voice again, telling him to return to Ahab with another message. Despite the fact that Ahab has been hunting him down, trying to kill Elijah because this drought has happened and he's not best pleased. So Elijah goes again. He's obedient to God's calling. He does exactly what God's asked. Not only that, he goes and he asks Ahab to gather together the people of Israel and all of these false prophets of Baal. It's about 850 false prophets. He could have kept this second encounter private between him and Ahab, but instead he follows God's instructions. He tells them, get everyone together. And then he lays down the gauntlet. He challenges these false prophets to prove the power of their God. They are going to publicly test whose God can consume an offering with fire. So they each prepare an altar and they sacrifice a bull and lay it on. And you just imagine this. You've got Elijah on his own on one side with his bull. And you have 850 prophets on this side with their bull. And you have the whole nation of Israel watching. 850. I mean, that is probably 9 times, 10 times what we've got in this room right now. Let alone everyone watching. Elijah trusts that Yahweh, his God, will act. He doesn't try to limit God or restrict him or find another way to make this happen that might be slightly less risky for him or slightly less humiliating. He steps out and he takes this enormous risk. And not only that, he stacks the deck massively against himself because he gets a whole load of water and douses his altar and douses his bull and everything around his altar with water, which in the middle of a drought is a pretty scarce commodity. But he just pours it over because he wants to give his God, Yahweh, a platform to demonstrate that he can do the impossible. Just imagine what it would have been like to be in that crowd watching. The suspense. You've then got these, the Baal prophets go first, the 850 of them. They spend hours. They are crying out to their God. They're going, come Baal, come, consume this offering. And it gets really quite awkward because hours later he still hasn't done anything. Elijah starts mocking them, going, maybe he's asleep. Maybe he's relieving himself, you know. And then a few hours later, they've kept going, and they give up. They go, okay, it's not going to happen. It's Elijah's turn. And with thousands of people watching on, he cries out to his God. O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and that I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know, O Lord, you are God and that you have turned their hearts back. Imagine the silence, the suspense, maybe just the sound of the wind. And then The whole altar goes up in flames. Many of you know that Chris and I go to North Wales a lot. We're really, really fortunate to stay in my grandparents' cottage, which is this little old farm worker's cottage halfway up the mountain, not much around. It's got these really big, thick stone walls and a lovely log burner. And that log burner is about 30 years old now. And I have been successfully laying fires in that log burner since I was very small, been taught my grandpa's method. But I have been really struggling to get a good blaze in it recently. And last time, well, we were there in November time, and we got snowed in November, totally unexpected, not ideal. But we thought, okay, this is perfect. Snowing outside, let's light the log burner. But because it hadn't been lit for several months, the flue was damp. So I laid this fire, and all I succeeded in doing was filling the whole cottage with smoke. So then we had to fling the doors wide open and the windows open, which obviously achieved entirely the opposite effect of what we were hoping. We were absolutely freezing. And in that moment, I have to confess, neither of us were particularly grateful for our blessings. But unlike us, and me with that log burner, despite Elijah's altar being absolutely sodden, the fire of God came down. This wasn't just a little spark that then eventually caught into this huge blaze. It came down and it consumed immediately. It consumed the offering, the bull. It consumed the wood it was laid on, and even the stones and the dust. And then it licked up the water that was remaining around the altar. We can safely say that God is about a billion times better at lighting fires than I am. But there could have been no question in that moment that only God could have done that. And that was because Elijah was prepared to be the lone voice. To take this huge risk, to step out. And therefore the people of Israel witnessed this miraculous deed. 1 Kings 18 says, it will come up. Oh. Are you doing it as well as me, Dave? I'm trying to go back. There we go. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, "The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." Are we prepared to take risks for God? Are we prepared to be foolish? Or appear foolish and be a lone voice? And are we expectant that God will move? Do we expect to see God do the miraculous among us? Perhaps Elijah found it easier to be expectant because he had just spent years in the wilderness being fed by ravens, depending on God. He had experienced God's provision for himself, and he wanted others to experience it too. And I really hope that you see this as an encouragement rather than an impossible standard to live up to, because I kind of doubt there's ever going to be an opportunity where you're going to be one against 850 trying to get a bull consumed by fire. It's fairly out there and radical. But take from this, our God has a proven track record. Last week, it was so encouraging to hear the stories that you shared of what God is doing in our lives and in the lives of those around us. Let's keep doing that. Let's not wait for a Share Your Story Sunday, because it's so important that we build one another up every week. And when we hear a story of God doing something in someone else's life, and that relates to something that you're desperate for, a breakthrough that you're waiting for, claim that story, claim that victory that you've just heard about, and hold on to it for yourself. Speak that over your own situation. Being expectant doesn't always mean getting what we want when we want it. But a holy expectancy looks forward to God moving and acting and teaching and bringing people back into relationship with him. The final aspect of Elijah's story that I want to look at is Elijah, the only prophet. And this bit comes after the big fire. The people of Israel have turned back to God, but Ahab's wife, Jezebel, is really angry because Baal was her god, and he has been totally humiliated, so she wants Elijah killed. So he flees and hides in a cave, and I don't blame him. And here God comes to him in the cave and asks him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" To which Elijah says in 1 Kings 19, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I, only am left, and they seek my life to take it away." I think, this is my interpretation, but I think in this moment Elijah is feeling a bit sorry for himself. I do have a tendency to do the same at times, so I'm not blaming him. But he seems to have lost sight of what he's just experienced. He's experienced this miraculous provision. He has seen God do a mighty thing. He doesn't refer to those. He focuses instead on the resistance of one person, of Jezebel. He sounds a bit frustrated, a bit defeated. And when I read that, I was actually really challenged because it served as a reminder to me to keep the big picture in full view. When we feel ourselves beginning to focus on the negative things like prayers that are unanswered, let's remember to hold on to what God has already done and what he promised to do for those who love him. And if we look at Elijah's complaint in a bit more detail, he does identify himself as the only prophet. But we know from the previous chapter that Elijah isn't the only prophet left. When he goes back to Ahab, he comes across Obadiah, the chief of staff for Ahab. And Obadiah tells him that he has hidden prophets in the caves to protect them. But Elijah isn't thinking about that. He feels alone in that moment, even if he knows he isn't. And he is choosing to believe a lie. And that is affecting his outlook. So what comes next is probably quite familiar to some of you. God tells Elijah to go and stand on the mountainside. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. When Elijah is feeling low and afraid, God comes to him in a quiet and gentle way. This God who has shown himself to Elijah in a really spectacular way comes in stillness. The Hebrew word for low whisper can be translated as a thin silence. I just want us to be silent for a moment and imagine, let's put ourselves in Elijah's shoes. Imagine him meeting God in the silence. In this place of stillness, God asks Elijah again, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" But Elijah answers exactly as before, word for word. He says, "I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars and killed the prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." Has Elijah missed what God is trying to show him? God had told him to go out and stand on the mountain, but he appears only to have gone when he hears the whisper. That last bit there says, "When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave." Elijah was clearly a man of God. He was obedient. He did trust God. He depended on him. He took risks for him. But in this moment, he chose to hold on to those lies. And I think he missed an opportunity here for even greater intimacy with God. Chris often jokes that he has to try and catch me for a hug. I can be so focused on what I'm doing that I try and sort of duck under his arms. He'll stand there with his arms wide open and I will find some way to get around him. And he has learned how to intercept me over time. And when he does, I might initially be a bit frustrated because I just want to carry on doing what I'm doing. But in those moments, the closeness is really special. And it's what is exactly what I need. And equally, I know there are times when my stubbornness and my self-pity gets in the way of intimacy with God. When I hold on to false truths rather than being willing to listen to his truth. When we're in those wilderness places, feeling lonely, it can be easy to miss God's whisper. We don't see our Heavenly Father standing with his arms open wide, inviting us into an embrace. Those moments when we feel alone are the moments when it is so important to lift our eyes from the floor, to look on the face of Christ, whose gaze is always on us. As I come to a close, I want to leave you with just one final thought, and that is the meaning of Elijah's name in Hebrew is "My God is Yahweh." Despite his flaws, Elijah was really faithful in worshipping God alone. And through his obedience, he was able to show the nation of Israel why Yahweh was the only God worth worshipping. Elijah was never alone. We are never alone. But Yahweh is the only God. He is all we need. So like Elijah, alone in the wilderness, will we depend on him? Will we trust in him? Like Elijah, the lone voice, will we take risks for him? Will we expect him to move? And learning from Elijah, will we listen to his whisper? Andy, I wonder if you and the band could come back up. And as the band get ready and start playing, I think it would be a great opportunity to just spend some time listening to God's still small voice. Perhaps you might want to just close your eyes and ask God, "Lord, what do you want to say to me right now?"